John Bachman, who pierces people's face. The K is for the kill, L is for the lover, and the M is for the mutiny, and I wish it didn't happen.
Pirate radio, pirate radio, pirate radio, arg, arg, arg. Pirate radio, pirate radio, pirate radio, where's my drum?
Now the N is for knots, oh no, my bones are sinking. The B is for the peg leg that keeps me standing up. A Q is for quantum leap, R is for the rum, and the S is for the scurvy, which I wish I didn't get.
Pirate radio, pirate radio, pirate radio, arg, arg, arg.
That's underneath my boat. And B is for Mukitas, who plays a sour note. W is Tiasis, X marks a spot. Why? Cause I'm a pirate.
Pirate radio, pirate radio, pirate radio, arg, arg, arg. Pirate radio, pirate radio, pirate radio, where's my grog?
This is WSQT Direct Action Radio, broadcasting on 88.1 FM from the heart of occupied Washington. We are news from the front line. We can be reached at WSQTRadio@hushmail.com, WSQTRadio@hushmail.com.
Welcome to Palestine Today, service of the International Middle East Media Center, www.imemc.org, for Wednesday, August 25th, 2010. Israeli schools given permission to discriminate based on race, and Bedouin women hold non-violent protest against home demolitions. These stories and more are coming up. Stay tuned. Five 500 Israeli citizens, escorted by dozens of military vehicles, drove by bus deep into the West Bank on Wednesday in a provocative visit to a West Bank holy site. Dozens of buses and military vehicles entered the West Bank in violation of the Oslo Agreement and other signed accords in the second such incident this month. On August 5th, around 300 Israelis were escorted into the same area to visit a site known as Joseph's Tomb in Nablus. During the incursion, Israeli military forces deployed in the area implemented increased security checks on the Palestinian residents of the region, delaying some people for several hours at checkpoints in order to allow the Jewish worshippers to pass freely. Around 700 Bedouin women held a protest in Jerusalem challenging the demolition of their villages by Israeli forces. They traveled to Jerusalem from the Negev Desert in southern Israel, where they live in unrecognized villages that have been razed multiple times since Israel was created in 1948. They gathered outside the Israeli Ministry of the Interior on Tuesday after the destruction of Al-Araqid village this past weekend, holding signs and chanting slogans. The women also submitted a letter of demands to the Israeli Interior Minister's advisor on minority affairs, Saeed Maaddi. The demands included a recognition of their villages and equal treatment under the law. Israeli authorities have destroyed hundreds of Bedouin villages in the Negev, many of them multiple times since 1948. The Israeli Education Ministry have approved a new settlement school that will discriminate based on race. Several months ago, a religious school in the illegal Israeli settlement of Emmanuel was criticized for segregating white Jewish students from non-white Jewish students in class. Originally, the school was fined for the policy of racial segregation because the school was state-funded. Now, the Israeli Education Ministry has agreed with the white parents' request to allow the school to continue with its racial discrimination under private funding. 74 white girls who have been studying in a building next to the school will now be allowed to study in white-only classrooms that are privately funded, as their parents claim they do not want their girls to study in racially mixed classrooms. And in international news, a protester was arrested in Chicago for challenging the city's sister-city relationship between the Israeli settlement of Petah Tikva. Palestine Solidarity Campaign in Chicago called on the city to end its relation with the settlement, which was constructed on stolen Palestinian land in violation of international law. The protester disrupted a cultural exchange event in which Israeli musicians performed for a Chicago audience. Thank you for joining us from Occupied Bethlehem. You've been listening to Palestine Today from the International Middle East Media Center. For constant updates, please visit our website at www.imenc.org. This report has been brought to you by George Shmawi and Hassan Kassis.
Afghanistan today. Fighters suspected by police of being from Chechnya are reported to have killed 8 police officers in an attack on a checkpoint in Kunduz. Afghanistan yesterday. An Afghan driver or recruit shot 2 Spanish soldiers and their interpreter in a training facility somewhere in Baghuz province. Afghanistan Tuesday. NATO is reporting the death of an occupation soldier from an IED attack in an undisclosed location in southern Afghanistan. Afghanistan, Monday. NATO is reporting the death of an occupation soldier from an insurgent attack in an undisclosed location in southern Afghanistan. Pakistan. The Taliban has ordered foreign flood relief workers to leave the country, calling their presence, quote, unacceptable. A U.S. security official reported this demand, which is believed to be a possible precursor to attacks on such aid workers. Don't believe all that garbage about the war in Iraq being over for 1 minute. The last full U.S. combat brigade may be out, with combat operations formally ending next week. But no insurgent group has left Iraq and their combat operations are ongoing. In fact, yesterday was a bloody day in Iraq with perhaps a dozen car bombs going off, several police stations blown up, and at least 61 people killed. Baghdad, Iraq, yesterday. A suicide bomber detonated a car bomb in a parking lot behind a police station, killing 15 people, including 6 policemen and 9 civilians. Another 58 were wounded, according to police and hospital officials. Baghdad, Iraq, yesterday. 2 more car bombs killed at least 4 people and wounded at least 15 others. Kut, Iraq, yesterday. At least 23 people were killed and some 60 wounded on Wednesday when a police headquarters in the city of Kut was blown up with a car bomb. Tikrit, Iraq, yesterday. Yet another police station was blown up with yet another car bomb, wounding several cops. U.S. forces in Iraq are still under fire as well. A U.S. soldier was killed Sunday by a rocket, presumably while on a so-called non-combat mission. The attacks are continuing. Thaikar, Iraq, Monday. A roadside bomb detonated near a convoy of the U.S. Provincial Reconstruction Team southwest of the Syria city, causing no admitted casualties or damage. It was reported as a, quote, locally made anti-shields bomb. Could this mean an explosively formed penetrator that failed to function properly? Those things can knock out a tank. Outside Basra, Iraq, Tuesday, a bomb went off targeting a U.S. convoy on Muhammad al-Qasim Road west of Basra, injuring 3 civilians and damaging a U.S. Hummer vehicle and a civilian car, Oswald Al-Iraq News Agency is reporting. Mr. Barack Obama, does this sound to you like 7 years of occupation has done anything to stop the civil war in Iraq? All U.S. war objectives in Iraq were defeated except for the overthrow of Saddam Hussein. Exxon and BP are not allowed to own Iraqi oil fields. The radical free trade and privatization experiment proposed by Paul Wolfowitz died under fire in summer 2003 as fired Sunni workers joined insurgent groups. Al-Qaeda in Iraq did not exist before the war, and unlike U.S. combat troops, is not even pretending to leave Iraq. Muqtada al-Sadr is unarrested and his Mahdi army is unbeaten and unbowed. Lastly, Mr. President, there is no stable government in Iraq 5 months after a Florida 2000-style election. Does this sound to you like copying the Iraq surge will get any different results in Afghanistan? Better idea? Pull the plug on the imperial dreams of George W. Bush. Bring all the troops home today.
And no amount of money you could give me, honey, couldn't pay me. Ain't going back again.
Protests at the homes of corporate criminals aren't just for those who torture animals anymore. On the 22nd of August, members of Code Pink showed up at the home of Blackwater's founder, Eric Prince. They were there to demand that he stay in the U.S. to face criminal charges for the infamous Nisour Square shootings, where his men murdered 17 innocent civilians in Baghdad back in 2007. The protest began with the delivery of a letter to the home, which was thought to be empty due to rumors that Eric Prince had fled to the United Arab Emirates.
All right, so here I'm going to put this up on Eric Prince's door, and this is a letter from the new company called Pinkwater. Dear Eric Prince, on behalf of U.S. taxpayers, we say shame on you. Through your company Blackwater, or Z, as you now like to call it, stole hundreds of millions of dollars. Your employees also killed innocent civilians in Iraq, and you should be held responsible. Don't run away to the Emirates to escape prosecution. Stay here in the USA and face the consequences of your actions like a good Christian.
That would be, yeah.
Sincerely, Pinkwater.
Ms. Pinkwater.
It turned out that at least Eric Prince's family was still there. At first, they invited Medea Benjamin into the house, only to turn around and demand that she leave, physically assault her, and then charge her with trespassing and have her arrested after being invited into the home when Ms. Prince realized this was about Blackwater's crimes. Here's what it sounded like when Ms. Prince decided to physically push Medea Benjamin out the door as she was attempting to leave under her own power.
I'm getting pushed out here.
Whoa.
So Eric Prince's family is actually here. They haven't left for the Emirates. They are all inside. We sat there and waited for the police to come because she said she'd called the police. And I just wanted to make sure that the police knew that we didn't trespass. We were asked to leave and left. And instead, she had me arrested.
A homeowner's authority to come out and talk to you.
They still have called us. It may not be the homeowners, but the people at the house have called us and told us that we have to come up here and make sure you guys get out.
Well, she said get out of
need your IDs.
She said get out of our house.
Yeah.
So
it's okay.
She never said get off the property, though.
Your ID in the car. Can you find it for me real quick, please?
So I was released from jail after 5 hours. This is the complaint that was filed by Joanna Prince, the wife of Eric Prince, and it accuses me of trespassing
or remaining on the property of Joanna Prince after having been forbidden to do so by an authorized individual. I had to put up $500 for a bond.
Remember, Blackwater's founder, Eric Prince, is looking at facing criminal charges for allowing his mercenaries to shoot down 17 men, women, and children at Nisour Square, the youngest being 9-year-old Ali Kanani. Yet he and his wife have the nerve to charge someone with trespassing after being invited into their home. It's Eric Prince who should be posting bail, or maybe not, since he's clearly a flight risk. Medea Benjamin of Code Pink was arrested for trespassing in a place in which she had been invited, unlike U.S. troops or mercenaries in Iraq. Hey, Eric Prince, you stinking water buffalo turd. Remember, in D.C., in the United States, and in Iraq, there's no sleep for the wicked. Suppose Army recruiting ads had to have side effect warnings like drug advertisements on TV do.
The United States Army may not be right for every patient. Side effects can include distress, disillusionment, bitter resentment, isolation, traumatic and post-traumatic stress, sociopathic behavior, uncontrollable sobbing, uncontrollable violence, prosecutions for war crimes, prosecutions for domestic crimes, loss of contact with loved ones, loss of ability to love, brain injuries, blindness, depleted uranium poisoning, flashbacks, horror of death, horror of being away from death, loss of the use of limbs, loss of limbs, death, suicide, excruciating pain, the desire to feel excruciating pain, overwhelming rage and misery, loss of hearing, punishment by the Army for failure to obey illegal orders, punishment by courts of law or by enemy forces for obeying illegal orders, torture, humiliation, shame, dangerous habits of blind subservience, or the wasting of what could have been the best years of your life. If you experience any of these symptoms, deal with it, sucker. You already signed your name on the dotted line.
Anti-war activist Anne Wright is running for the D.C. Council chair position in the upcoming elections. On the 18th of August, she spoke at a candidates' forum in downtown D.C. on the subject of education. She was the only candidate to address the issue of JROTC, or Junior Reserve Officer Training Corps, in the D.C. public schools.
Also wanted to raise the issue of JROTC in the schools. I think there is...
Yeah. Get that out.
Yes. It serves a purpose for some students. A lot of schools rely on that as a way to instill discipline among students. But I think it should just be seen as one possible alternative. Students should be told there are other kinds of volunteer programs you can do. There's service abroad that you can do that's not necessarily going into the military. It's not a panacea for people to get jobs and benefits in the future.
That's right.
It's we need to make sure that we have equal access for groups that are showing alternatives to JROTC and not just funnel kids into that program. Thank you.
Controversy over the location of a proposed Islamic community center, two blocks from Ground Zero in New York City, erupted into a late summer firestorm with possible political consequences in this November's midterm congressional election. Plans for the building include a culinary school, an auditorium, a swimming pool, a basketball court, and space for prayer. The Park 51 project, as it's known, is being led by Imam Faisal Abdul Rauf, a Sufi Muslim who was selected as an emissary to the Middle East on behalf of the Bush administration in 2007 and continues to participate in State Department trips abroad to foster better understanding of religion in U.S. society. Opponents of the Islamic Center assert that the site is too close to hallowed ground, where more than 2,700 people were killed during Al-Qaeda's September 11th attack on the World Trade Center. Supporters of the project respond that condemning all of Islam for the 9/11 attacks is based on ignorance and back the imam's stated goal of building bridges across religious lines. But inflammatory media coverage of the controversy has amplified the voices of hate and intolerance, with, for example, Fox News commentator Dick Morris condemning the building project as a command center for terrorism, and former House Speaker Newt Gingrich comparing Islam with Nazism. Between the Lines, Scott Harris spoke with Peter Hart, activism director with the Media Watch Group Fairness and Accuracy in Reporting, or FAIR. Hart assesses the corporate media's coverage of the Ground Zero Islamic Center controversy by examining many news outlets' culpability for disseminating misinformation and a failure to forcefully respond to smears and innuendo.
I think it's one of those stories where you can see every deplorable tendency in the corporate media on display at one time for over a sustained number of days and weeks. You have a story that's really a non-story pushed into the mainstream media by shadowy and sometimes not so shadowy forces on the right. You have a mainstream media that, when confronted with this story, does little to unspin or unpack some of the bogus allegations, the fear-mongering, the Islamophobia that is at the heart of the story. And then you have successive rounds of coverage that look at it as a political controversy. So that excuses another day of engaging in this nonsense. Looks at it as a through a partisan lens, which Democrats, which Republicans are lining up on which side. I think, the essence of this story, the shortage of courage in our political circles and in our media circles speaks volumes about where we are some 9 years after the 9/11 attacks and where we are in terms of how Americans talk about Islam and Islam and politics.
One of the points of contention in this argument about whether this mosque should be located two blocks from Ground Zero in New York City is the character of the man behind the mosque building proposal, and that's Imam Faisal Abdul Rauf. He's certainly someone, while being criticized on the right, was an emissary for the Bush administration, having traveled to the Middle East on behalf of the Bush State Department at least twice in 2007. He continues in that role under the Obama administration. How has the media handled the smears against this particular fellow, who seems to be an ally of President George W. Bush, certainly someone the right has great fondness for?
Yeah, I mean, the coverage has sort of vacillated between awful and terrible, with a couple of exceptions. And it's sort of frustrating to talk about this, because there's no issue here, really. So you are responding to this ginned-up nonsense. This is a Sufi imam who has no particularly strong political allegiances, certainly none to groups that we would associate with militant Islam or even militant advocacy of a Palestinian cause or anything like that. There's really nothing to this idea that he represents a particularly dangerous strain of Islam. Far from it. As you mentioned, he was an emissary of the Bush administration, continuing in that role in the Obama administration. That's part of the reason he's not been speaking out, is because he's actually in the middle of a tour to promote the idea that America is tolerant of Islam, if you want to pile the irony on top of the rest of this story. So you have a character, a central character in this, who does not fit the bill. This story was pushed forward by a handful of right-wing bloggers and folks in the Rupert Murdoch media empire who decided that the way to make this politically viable and salient was to lie about every aspect of it. So we have a mosque that's not entirely a mosque, that isn't being built on Ground Zero, that isn't being led by a terror imam. There are long stories, you know, long-form journalism. You can read, I think, a piece in the New York Times, there was one in the Washington Post, that try to get at who this guy is now several weeks into this story. It's a little late at this point to try to set the record straight after you've let the narrative sit idle for so long, unchallenged. But you do read these stories and you realize that he was considered something of a bridge builder in the American Islamic community and in the political circles that he was a part of. so it's kind of shocking that the accusations would be leveled against someone like him, precisely because he was held up as an example of exactly the type of Muslim we wanted speaking out after 9/11 and spreading messages of interfaith dialogue and tolerance. This is exactly what this guy's been doing. A couple years ago, he was on a show with Glenn Beck, and they got along famously about the need to do this. When the Park 51 development was first announced, his wife was on Fox News Channel, and it was heralded as a good idea. The politics changed, and folks on the right saw this as a golden opportunity to find the kind of wedge issue they need to run in election years, and they ran with it. And the media have been trailing a couple steps behind, not really doing much of anything to unpack this completely bogus story.
Tell us if you think the political motivation here, if any, is really predicated on the idea that some points could be scored by conservative Republican candidates in this November's important midterm election.
Well, you have two choices when you're looking at this story. Either the people who pushed this story did it because they simply hate Islam and want to spread false messages, or they did this because they knew it would be politically useful to do it. And I think the latter explanation makes more sense. The fact that you have seen this outpouring of anti-Muslim, anti-mosque protests in other parts of the country, in Tennessee, in Southern California, that goes to show you that they're trying to tap something deeper here, the kind of cultural resentment that you usually see in an election year, particularly in a midterm election year when you know that you need to come up with issues to excite your base, since the base of a party is generally who turns out in an election year such as this one. We know the Democratic Party base is less motivated to vote in 2010, and we know that the Republican base needs issues like this. So you have these stories where you can see Republican politicians across the country and pollsters and campaign advisors saying, listen, the way to campaign on this issue is to look at your opponent, point at him or her, and say, listen, what's your position on the Ground Zero Mosque? They effectively want to make this a national issue. And I think, based on the way the media have been covering it, it's a smart move, and I think a really tragic lesson in what kind of things one can do in order to run an election campaign based on fear and innuendo and nonsense.
That was Peter Hart, activism director with the Media Watch Group, Fairness and Accuracy in Reporting. Contact FAIR at area code 212-633-6700 or visit their website at fair.org.
In Salisbury, Maryland, on the Eastern Shore, someone shot up a Republican Party field office. The cops found the front glass door smashed and thought it was routine vandalism, according to the Washington Post. They thought that until they looked inside and found a bullet in the walls. If smashing glass doors is routine vandalism of GOP field offices and party headquarters, that sounds to me like some insurgents here in the U.S. have really had enough of the venom flowing from GOP hate mongers like Glenn Beck and all his racist pro-war friends. Bullets through the door is points on the board, so maybe the GOP and their teabagger friends are not as popular as they thought. This is WSQT Direct Action Radio, broadcasting on 88.1 FM from the heart of occupied Washington. We are news from the front line. We can be reached at WSQTRadio@hushmail.com. WSQTRadio@hushmail.com.
During the sometimes ugly debate about the proposed location of an Islamic community center two blocks from the site of the September 11th terrorist attacks in New York City, family members of 9/11 victims have often been quoted as expressing opposition to the project. Many have said that the location at an abandoned Burlington Coat Factory building opens up old wounds, is too close to hallowed ground, or just plain hurtful. Arguments which counter that another mosque has been located for years just four blocks from the World Trade Center site fail to change the minds of many 9/11 family members who are still grieving for loved ones lost. But the mother of one 9/11 victim has a very different perspective from the majority of family members quoted in the media. Talat Hamdani's son Salman, a New York City police cadet and emergency medical technician, was killed on September 11th when he went to the burning Twin Towers to assist in rescuing victims of the attack. When Talat did not hear from her son in the days after 9/11, she was told that as a Muslim, he may have been arrested by the FBI as a terrorist suspect. The New York Post newspaper, in a sensational headline, proclaimed that Salman was either missing or hiding. The unfounded accusations of her son's complicity with terrorism compounded a mother's grief when Talat was informed 6 months after the attack that Salman's remains were located under the World Trade Center rubble. Between the Lines, Scott Harris spoke with Talat, an active member of the group 9/11 Families for Peaceful Tomorrows, who responds to those protesting the building of an Islamic center near the site where her son died as he attempted to rescue victims of the attack.
I understand, you know, many people died, 3,000, 2,700 died, and some of them were Muslims. They were people of all faith, all ethnicities, and even different nations also, who were not American citizens, and they died over there. And there were many other Muslims, you know, South Asians who died, who were not even reported missing because maybe they were not legal, and maybe no one knows, the cab drivers and all those other, you know, bystanders. But to say that it's hallowed ground, yes, it is a hallowed ground. But this cultural center, the Muslim cultural center, is not being built on the footprints. There are a few churches over there. The Trinity Church is on the footprint of the Twin Towers. There's a synagogue over there. I have no objection to any place of worship or faith. But for them to object, the protesters, whoever they are, for them to say that it is a sensitive issue. Yes, it's sensitive, but what about the sensitivities of all of the people who are being targeted as painted by a broad brush as all Muslims are terrorists? And to me, it is an issue of my fundamental right, freedom of religion. The people that were murdered that day by Al-Qaeda were not murdered because of their faith or race or ethnicity. They were murdered because they were Americans and they believed in the American values. American values of liberty, democracy, freedom of faith, pursuing your own faith. And not to honor those values, I don't think it is appropriate. It's a disgrace if you don't hold on to those values for which all those people died that day.
Talat, what is your response to people who talk about the presence of a mosque being very hurtful, that it reopens old wounds, that it's too close to the hallowed ground where your own son died? How do you respond to the idea that somehow the entire Islamic faith is responsible for 9/11?
Yes, it's a case of collective guilt, which is not right. But then if you look at the history, look at our history, we have done that over the past years. You know, there was a time when the Catholics were not allowed to, you know, pray in Georgia. The Mormons were thrown out, you know. So it's something, I call it initiation into the American system, that we need to prove. But I think, you know, this has gone too far, and it has been complicated. It has been, you know, made complex by the politicians, I think, on both sides, I have to say now, who are exploiting this issue to benefit their own selfish goals, agendas to win the political elections. And it is, you know, it is very wrong. It's cruel. It's unethical. Our blood has been shed. And to exploit such a big tragedy for your own selfish goals. I mean, Senator Harry Reid came out and said, you know, they should move from there. And, you know, other people came out. If you cannot defend the Constitution, I'd say, then you need not be in the Congress, whether Senate or, you know, a congressperson, then you should not be there. Then resign and let someone else get into that seat so they can defend the Constitution. Because to me, it is about the whole community, you know. There's a division. Our country has been divided along the lines of faith now, which is not good. We need to heal. We need to come together and heal. And the best way to heal is to have this cultural center whose objective is to reconcile and build bridges.
Are you in favor of dialogue with the opponents of this Islamic center being built two blocks from Ground Zero? Would you like to sit down with these people face to face, or do you think that any negotiation would be some kind of invitation to persecution.
What is there to negotiate, Scott? What am I going to negotiate? My son died. He was a Muslim. I'm a Muslim. I am, you know, so what is there to negotiate? The cultural center is legal, legitimate, you know, it's being built on private property with proper zoning. Because the sentiment of 60% of people do not agree with it, doesn't mean that we have to relinquish our rights. Why do we have to relinquish our rights? If they don't like the cultural center, they don't have to go there. You don't have to visit it. Nobody wants you, just asking you to go there and force you to go there. You go to your own churches and synagogues or your temples, wherever you want to go to pray. But to deny a faith to have their religious place over there, which is more of a, you know, like a YMCA is going to be an MCC, like a JCC is going to be an MCC, Muslim Cultural Center, and the objective is to build bridges. Imam is on a state visit. He is our emissary to the Middle East since President Bush's time.
Right, right.
And to demonize him, you know, I mean, they're demonizing President Obama, that he is a Muslim, as though it is a crime to be a Muslim. The White House had to come out and make a categorically statement that, no, he's a Christian. I don't think that was necessary.
That was Talat Hamdani, mother of 9/11 victim Salman Hamdani, an active member of the group 9/11 Families for Peaceful Tomorrows. Contact the group at area code 212-598-0970 or visit their website at peacefultomorrows.org.
For the past 64 years, the School of the Americas in Fort Benning, Georgia has been graduating assassins, dictators, and death squad leaders to do the dirty work of the elite in Latin America. The taxpayer-funded SOA has left a trail of violence and suffering in every country where its graduates have returned. Hundreds of thousands of Latin Americans have been tortured, raped, assassinated, disappeared, displaced, and massacred by those trained at the SOA. Enough is enough. Every year, thousands gather in Georgia to protest U.S. military involvement in Latin America. Join us at the gates of the SOA this November to honor the victims, celebrate the resistance, and pressure our government to shut down the school once and for all. From November 18th to 21st, we will have live concerts, speakers from around the world, street theater, workshops, and more. For more information on how you can stand with us to end the injustice, visit SOAW.org or call 202-234-3440.
On the 21st of August, Peter Bass, a senior executive with Goldman Sachs, received a protest at his home over Goldman Sachs' status as a major stockholder in Fortress Inc. Fortress made over $100 million in loans to puppy-killing Huntington Life Sciences and is the reason Huntington Life Sciences still exists. Huntington Life Sciences is a contract animal testing laboratory where undercover investigations have caught researchers punching beagle puppies in the face and dissecting live monkeys without any painkillers. After a protest at a Novartis executive in Chevy Chase, protesters showed up at the home of Peter Bass, an attorney for Goldman Sachs.
Area. Comes another one.
Of Huntington Life Sciences.
tried with Huntington Life Sciences due to protests such as these. There's nothing personal about this in your neighborhood. We just want your neighbor to stop doing business with an animal abusing, puppy killing, kitty cat killing, primate annihilating business like Huntington Life Sciences. So, Peter Bass, until next time, until all are free, we'll be back! We'll be back! We'll be back! We won't tell you where!
Police response was astounding. 7 cop cars on 5 protesters, and even after the protests were done, the cops followed people through the streets, leapfrogging and even driving on the sidewalk. At least a quarter mile away, and there's still a bunch of cops following people who are just going back to the metro. Just going and going and going. It's almost like that time back in December when people were followed away from Jennifer LeRae's house. Did you get a load of this? Cop cars driving on the sidewalk just to follow animal rights activists.
Breaking laws, endangering lives.
These cops did nothing but follow people around, but even illegal arrests and blatant harassment have never stopped these protesters. Metropolitan Police Department, Goldman Sachs, Fortress, all your cops and all your lies, these folks will never compromise, because in D.C. there's no sleep for the wicked.
They can't stop us, let them try!
The siege of Fortress continues with Huntington Life Sciences protests at Goldman Sachs' D.C. offices on the 24th of August. The fire alarm was ringing as protesters approached, and they caught everyone outside.
Here on Constitution Avenue, this is the D.C. office of Goldman Sachs. We are here because Goldman Sachs is one of the top shareholders in Fortress Investment, which is the life support system of Huntington Life Sciences. Huntington Life Sciences is a contract animal testing facility that murders 500 animals each and every day of the week. They have been exposed in 7 separate undercover investigations for punching beagle puppies in the face, dissecting live primates, and mutilating rabbits to the highest bidder. We have issued a letter to Goldman Sachs saying that they need to have a meeting with us and talk about their ties with Huntington Life Sciences. They refused this meeting, so we are here. We brought this fight to your office, building Goldman Sachs. Because 500 animals
died with the men at nothing ding.
Goldman Sachs is too late.
Bow your hands. You must understand.
Their blood is on your hands.
That's right, Goldman Sachs. The blood is on your hands. Because you fund Fortress Investments, who's the lifeline of Huntington Life Sciences, and you refuse to respond to our letter, to return to our phone calls, or to meet with us. This is the first time that you have seen us at your offices, but we can promise you, Goldman Sachs, this is not the last time. We will be out here week after week, month after month, year after year, if that's what it takes, until you stop funding animal deaths and until you do the right thing and end your involvement with Fortress Investments. We will name you, we will shame you, we will call you out until you drop Fortress and HLS or until you drop with them. That's a promise that you can take to the bank. So Goldman Sachs, until next time,
until all are free, We'll be back! We won't tell you when!
More protests took place at the offices of Nomura, which owns 15% of Fortress and shares a director. An absent receptionist allowed protesters to enter the office. Finally, protesters showed up at the offices of AstraZeneca and Bayer.
Sciences
and therefore directly responsible for the animals who die inside of their walls. Because 500 animals died today!
That's just the guys to blame!
500 dead and nothing gained!
That's the arrows to blame!
500 animals died today!
That's just the guys to blame!
Bayer, AstraZeneca, Nomura, Goldman Sachs, and Fortress, you heard that. Dump Huntington Life Sciences or be dumb.
Well, DNA is natural. It's the building block of life. And when the good Lord put it together, you know, I think he did it upright. He made lots of different organisms, a complex web of life. Each one dependent on another, and so the circle it closed up tight. But then along came a man and a microscope, and he separated the genes. And when he put them all back together, he made lots of strange, unnatural things. And now food crops grow on the ocean floor, cows that grow on trees. Now the ranchers gaze while their oysters graze on grass that depends on a hormone spray and our genetically modified world.
Laura Kelly grew up in a family that lived off the land on Cape Cod. Employing the knowledge gleaned in her early years, Kelly has worked for the past 18 years as a beekeeper, organic landscaper and designer, a nutritionist and naturalist. She owns Littlefield Landscapes in northeastern Massachusetts, where the horticulturist helps others support an organic lifestyle. Kelly offered one of 200 workshops at the 36th Annual Northeast Organic Farming Conference, August 13th through August 15th, at the University of Massachusetts Amherst. She presented a workshop called Edible Landscapes that focused on the symbiotic relationships among humans, other animals, and plants. After her workshop, she spoke with Between the Lines' Melinda Tuhus about her observations on the disappearance of honeybees, issues of pollution and food production, and the philosophy which guides her daily life.
I started off with plants and animals, as you know, and then as I grew older, I started planting plants for money, landscaping. I'm a land designer. And then I realized that I wasn't getting stung very often. Our pollinators were disappearing in the 90s. So I started studying about honeybees and then learned that it's more than just here's a bee, here's a plant, here's an animal, here's a human. We're all together, and we're actually a symbiotic relationship. And we matter to each other. And right now, what the humans are doing is depleting the planet due to, you know, overuse of toxins in the air, in the water, in the soil. And we're seeing those reactions in nature with our honeybees disappearing, our frogs are switching sexes, our whales are reproducing females more than males, etc., etc. We can see it, we can say it, we see it in a science lab, we say it. What is it going to take to get the humans to actually shift enough to change the impact we're having on the planet right now into a more positive direction to help protect us and save us and keep us healthy for future generations? So this is what drives me. You know, I am a beekeeper and I see them every single day. I learn something new. To me, they're a reflection of us. So what they're going through, we're going through. They're not able to reproduce honey right now. That means they're not able to reproduce their own food source. We're the same way. What does that mean? That means humans are not able to produce our own food source, and that's correct because we're now creating things out of a science lab called genetically modified organisms.
I'm going to back you up a second. What do you mean they can't produce their own food? Why can't they produce honey?
We don't know. It's mysterious. In 2007 was the mysterious disappearance of honeybees, which meant when a bee gets sick, it will not go home to actually contaminate their home, their hive. So they were disappearing, and it was such a mystery. We didn't know what was going on. Worldwide, we lost a third of the bees worldwide. In 2009, in the winter, we now have lost another half over the winter. Their immune systems are so depleted because of their food source. It all boils down to food. How are we feeding ourselves? How are the bees feeding themselves? How the plants get fed? The way that we're treating our food sources, we as in humans, is depleting everything else. So genetically modified organism is a dead food. There's not enough nutritional value to keep bees healthy, which means we are also depleting ourselves. So we should be careful on how we're growing things. I believe that our dollar is our vote. Every single day, each one of us can actually put our dollar towards an organization in a direction that that organization is helping the planet and doing right by you know, their standards and quality. And we need to pay attention to what that really means. And that is the direction that we need to go in for our next generations to be here healthy and happy.
When you say organization, are you talking about how we just spend our consumer dollars, whatever we do with it, or are you talking about a specific organization?
In general, I would say absolutely everything. You know, where do we go buy our gas? Where do we go to a restaurant? Where do we buy our clothing? Right now, we're losing honeybees. What does that mean? No bees equals no food. I mean, we just don't get that. I think we, you know, can say it and we can see it, but are we doing enough about it? No, we haven't. We haven't taken glyphosate out of the picture yet. Glyphosate is Roundup, and that is depleting not just, you know, our food sources, but our soil. You know, the microorganisms that's mandatory for growing our plants are gone. So they say if bees leave the planet, we only have 5 years to live. Honeybees are the most aggressive pollinators in the world. Sure, there are other pollinators, the bumblebees and the butterflies, you know, even human pollinators now. It's a new job line. They're out there. You know, it takes one bee actually pollinates 30 apple trees, and one human can do one apple tree. We cannot reproduce honey in a science lab or wax or honeybees. So we need to take care, and we need to just switch our habits, you know, and just switching the way you treat your land, your own soil outside. You know, if we could put worms back, you know, through compost tea, you know, then it would fortify your root system. In 2 years, it'll be self-sustaining. There are ways, and it's about listening and learning and shifting and caring. You know, how are we going to, you know, the next 10 years defines what the next, you know, 100 years is going to be.
That was Laura Kelly. Contact her at area code 774-353-6511. Or visit her website at littlefieldlandscapes.com.
Is your SUV running low on gas? Is your wallet been running on fumes lately? Well, this is Behind Pollution, offering blowout prices on regular, plus, and premium at every BP Behind Pollution gas station, where you can get a gusher of savings filling up that Ford Excursion or that Hummer. And never mind our blown out oil well at Macondo in the Gulf of Mexico. Never mind all those oiled pelicans. And never mind this burning hot summer of global warming. Never mind the voices that tell you to boycott BP for the horrific things Behind Pollution is done in the Gulf of Mexico. Just keep filling up that SUV. Just keep enjoying that gusher of savings the blowout prices at BP gas stations are bringing you. After all, you never liked seafood much anyway.